This is Hot Talk 560 KSFO with Jeff Metcalf. Call Jeff now at 808-5600. Now, here's Jeff.
Welcome back, folks, and or welcome aboard. My name is Jeff Metcalf. 12:06-ish, almost. 808-5600 is the phone number, 808-5600. The number we provide so that you can call to express your views and opinions about the things and stuff we're talking about and or bring up something else. You can always email me whether I'm here or not, and I'll be here today and next Sunday. You can email me at Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at jeffmetcalf.com. A couple of things I want to touch on in this hour, but before I get to kind of pet peeves, I saw this piece which I posted to the triage of the news. Now, I don't normally do update my page on the weekend, but I did it for you guys. And if you go to jeffmetcalf.com, you'll see this story about this controversial artist who depicts Obama trampling the Constitution. In front of the White House, you get this guy sitting on a park bench in the throes of depression. He's surrounded by all 43 presidents. And in the foreground, purposefully ignoring the depressed man, is President Barry Obama, whose right foot is stepping on the Constitution. James Madison is next to him, pleading with him to stop. The tableau was called The Forgotten Man, and it's a painting by John McNaughton, an artist who is known for his politically charged work. The painting, which uses objects such as a discarded dollar bill as symbols and scraps of paper with individual constitutional amendments scrawled on them, has been making the rounds through the Internet for some time. It was initially released a couple of years ago, I think, and then it resurfaced, causing a stir when it appeared in the caption contest on MSNBC. So responses were, you know, ranged from sarcastic to, you know, whatever. But check out the painting. And I'm not going to spend much more time on the story itself, but go to jeffmetcalf.com, go down to the controversial artist. Actually, I got a picture of the thing up there, and you can take a look at it. And if you want to comment on it, you can. If you want to bring it up to Brian in the morning, you can do that. 808-5600 is the phone number. Once upon a time, back in a previous iteration, when I was still on KSFO full-time, I talked about the dangers of cyberspace to our OPSEC, military security, basically, operational security, and specifically the threat posed by the Communist Red Chinese. And the Chinese have been working this cyber warfare thing aggressively. Now, there was a Time, I think it was Time and Newsweek, had a big cover story about what the U.S. was doing to defend against cyber assaults. And I think the Air Force was doing it then. We haven't seen a lot since. There have been a couple of stories recently that we're paying attention finally and trying to do something to, you know, develop a more aggressive defense posture to hacking. And I can remember making the observation once upon a time that in the future, because eventually, inevitably, at some point, based on their plans and what they tell us, the Communist Red Chinese anticipate that there's going to be a military confrontation between the Communist Red Chinese and the United States, largely because the Communist Red Chinese intend to establish hegemony over first Asia and then the world, and before they can take over the world, they realize that, you know, we're standing in the way. Because we are, you know, the one left standing superpower, and they want to change that. And they're working a plan, and their plan is to, you know, improve their economy, to improve their military readiness, and a whole bunch of other things so that they can eventually, they know that if they were to start a war today, even as bad, in as bad a shape as we are, we would still probably prevail with a coalition of, you know, Western support. What it really comes down to is, and this is where the cyber warfare kind of gets escalated, preparation of the battlefield is something you don't hear a lot of mainstream types talk about. The military has understood it for a long, long time, whether it was the Roman legions using catapults of fire to, you know, impact the picks before they assaulted them, or whether it was in the First World War, and they were using, you know, poison gas in the trenches, or artillery barrages. You go back to the Battle of Agincourt, and, you know, archers, there's always, in the preparation of the battlefield, there's always that preliminary stage where they try to attrit and soften the enemy before the actual assault. Well, in the future, what I say is going to happen is before the battle ensues, the preparation of the battlefield is going to include a war in outer space. Now, I'm not talking Star Wars stuff here, okay? Really. What I'm talking about is our satellites right now service not just GPS and navigational things, but also fire direction control. And it was announced, I think, a couple of years ago that the Communist Red Chinese were developing their own GPS satellites. And you might say, well, why are they doing that? You know, they can strap hang on ours. It's no problem. Well, there's a couple of obvious reasons why they want their own proprietary satellites up in the sky for both navigation and fire direction control. Because before the battle ensues in the future, the Chinese are going to attack our satellites, try to take them out. Likewise, because America doesn't totally have their head directly defiled, we recognize that they're going to be doing that. And so we have to do two things. Number one, we have to harden and or prepare to defend our satellites. And at the same time, we need to be able to offensively go after their satellites and take them out of operation. Because, like I said, this whole GPS stuff and the satellites, it isn't just land navigation, sea navigation, air navigation. A lot of this stuff is linked to actual munitions. It used to be once upon a time, and they still teach it, that you needed some young kid on a hill somewhere, on a battlefield, to direct fire on a target. Forward observers would sit on a hilltop with binoculars and a radio, and they'd be talking to the fire direction control center and say, okay, fire at this grid coordinate. They'd give an 8-digit grid coordinate, and they'd watch in the rounded fire land, and they'd go boom. They'd say, okay, move it 100 yards to the right and drop it another 100 yards, and they'd fire again. And go, boom. They'd say, okay, yeah, we're close. Move it to the left about 50 meters and fire again. Boom. Okay, that's good enough. Fire for and then they fire all the stuff. Now, we have two alternatives in fire direction control. Number one, you can have that same kid sitting on the hill out there, but instead of looking through the binoculars and on the radio and talking to the fire direction control center, he takes this little plastic toy kind of gun that shoots a laser, and he basically paints the target. He points the laser at whatever he wants to hit, and he depresses the trigger, and the munition goes up in the air, goes, smells around, finds the laser, boom, and it hits right on the spot. Pretty slick. Pretty slick. But we got something even slicker now. Now we have the capacity to program into various munitions an 8-digit grid coordinate so that whatever is being shot, whether it's a missile or an artillery round or whatever, goes up into the sky and then immediately hones in on wherever that 8-digit grid coordinate is on the ground, and it lands, boom! It's very, very efficient. Well, obviously the thing that's directing these munitions is the satellite in the sky. We have our satellites. Eventually, the Chinese are going to have their satellites. So beyond just making it difficult to navigate, we're also now talking about the delivery of munitions onto targets. So in the preparation of the future battlefield, what you're going to see happening is we're going to be trying to hit their satellites, they're going to be trying to hit our satellites, and both sides are going to be trying to defend against them. So that in the future, and I've joked about this, that it used to be that the gung-ho Strat guys were, you know, all those HUA schools I went to, Airborne, Rangers, Special Forces, you know, SEALs, PJs, all these guys who were, you know, hard physical specimens and do all the, you know, pointy edge of the spear kind of stuff. But in the future, particularly as this whole cyber warfare craft is developed, the hardcore Strat troops in the future who are going to be telling, you know, the John Rambos where to go and what to do, are going to be some pimply-faced kid sitting in a basement playing at, you know, four computer screens. It's going to be that guy, the Hugh Jackman character from Swordfish. Did you see that movie with John Travolta? That computer guy, the hacker who has the capacity to do magic. Those are the kids who are going to be, and the hackers that are attacking, you know, military sites now, rather than throw them in jail, they're going to be enlisted. Anyway, they're going to be used as resources. Anyway, that's one guy's opinion for what it's worth. 808-5600 is the phone number, 808-5600. You can email me 24/7 on this Super Bowl Sunday at Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at jeffmetcalf.com. We'll be right back after this on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
This is Hot Talk 560 KSFO with Jeff Metcalf.
That's the me. 1218 on Hot Talk 560 KSFO, 808-5600 is the phone number. You can call to express your views and opinions or add stuff. You can email me at Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at jeffmetcalf.com. So for nearly a year now, Syria's government has sustained a violent crackdown against opposition protesters. The international community has struggled to agree on some kind of unified response, and the latest effort to bring pressure to Syria just kind of fell apart. Russia and China vetoed the resolution that the UN had crafted on Syria. And the rejected draft was rejected for a variety of reasons. But, people itching and moaning and screaming and shouting and saying, well, I got to do something. And I kind of disagree. And here's why. Here's the catch-22. First off, I have absolutely no use for the United Nothing. All right? The UN is, in my estimation, a collection of pampered bureaucrats who abuse their power under the color of authority, live the high life away from their desolate rat hole countries, wherever they may be, and don't do jack spit other than make problems. Just one guy's opinion, okay? You can agree or disagree. However, when it comes to this sanctioning of countries that the UN seems to, jones for, there's a basic problem. Once upon a time, long ago and far away, in the bad year, 1913, when we got the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 and the 16th Amendment and all that bad stuff happened, there was, within the Woodrow Wilson administration, an effort to create a League of Nations. And the League of Nations was originally intended to be kind of a superpower, a new world order to control the globe, okay? And what people fail to recognize is, although it was the brainchild of and crafted by and peddled by Americans, at least elements within the Wilson administration, America refused to ratify it. And you know why? Because the League of Nations required a sovereign country ostensibly to abrogate their sovereignty to a higher power, and the higher power was the League of Nations. We said, that dog ain't going to hunt here. Uh-uh. Not in the Republic. Not with our Constitution. So it died. Went away. 1945, they come back with a kind of a mega do-over. And the do-over was the United Nations. And the United Nations was the same kind of concept, but without the heavy-handed reach. It didn't require it was kind of a more of a debating club than anything else, because it didn't have any teeth to it. And what's happening now is, because it doesn't have any teeth, they're trying to get teeth. In fact, Thursday or Friday, I did a story about them wanting a 0.005% global tax so that they could basically redistribute the wealth. Well, last time they came up with an idea like this, it was to create a military structure, because they don't have an army, they don't have taxing ability, they don't need it, they shouldn't get it, because they're going to abuse it. But it kind of dovetails with the problem with the Syrian sanction, which I'll get to right after we hear what our friend in Livermore has to say. Ray in Livermore, you're on the air with Jeff Metcalf. Good morning.
Airborne greetings, Colonel.
All the way.
Hooah.
Hooah.
You're talking about China and war in space. And if I'm not mistaken, a guy by the name of Don Rumsfeld wrote a paper on this. Was it in 98 or 99?
It was 98, I think.
Yeah, and he was poo-pooed by the left, and he was told that he was a warmonger, and he wanted to take weapons into space, and how this was all wrong. And here we are. In fact, why are we here? Primarily because Clinton...
Because Bill Clinton gave a 10-year head start on the whole satellite program.
They couldn't even get a rocket into space without it self-destructing until Bill Clinton And Loral Space, through the donor, Bernard Schwartz, Clinton donor, and they gave that technology to China.
And I remember saying at that time on KSFO, my concern is, was it a bribe or was it a gratuity? Were they paying China to, were they taking the money from China to get what they wanted, or were they paying them back for what they got?
You know, it's hard to say, but as the old saying goes, follow the money. And, you know, China has already put a shot across our bow when they knocked down that weather satellite, it was a couple years ago, and left huge amounts of space junk circling this planet. And it was nothing less, again, than a shot across the bow saying, look, we can take them down anytime we want, and we don't care what kind of mess we cause in space. And so here we are, fast forward to this dance that we're doing with Iran right now. You know, and it's the same thing. We know what's going on, but we're blindly walking into this thing, Jeff. And, you know, let me just close by saying it's great to have you back on the air. I hope management gets their act together and puts you in a regular slot, brother.
Ray, me too. I thank you very kindly for the call. Appreciate it. 808-5600 is a dovetail to what Ray just mentioned about China and what I was saying earlier about this Syrian thing. Syria is a bad player, okay? We don't like Syria. We want things to change in Syria. We didn't like Muammar Gaddafi. We wanted things to change there, but look what happened. Sometimes the evil you know, evil you don't know. Now we've got this Muslim Brotherhood, you know, on steroids, just, you know, cascading through the Mideast, and you can't compel a government to change the way you want them to, okay? And this really goes to the essence of sovereignty. We don't like Iran, all right? And frankly, there's a huge element within Iran. By the way, they prefer them, they're Persians in their estimation, okay? Who want to make some change. But the problem is most of the people who could or would effect a regime change in Iran aren't in Iran. I mean, it's not like when we went into Afghanistan and you had this organized, experienced, battle-hardened, guerrilla entity that was there and ready to go out and fight. All you had to do was give them money and give them weapons, and they'd go kill the bad guys. You don't have that in Iran because most of the organized resistance to the mullahs is in L.A., Chicago, Boston, Paris, Zurich, Belgium, wherever. And the people in Iran, the indigenous population who attempt to rise up, they either get killed or incarcerated. So is there a need for regime change in Iran? Yeah. Should we do it? No. Should we assist those who want to do it? Yeah. And the same holds true for Syria or in Libya or wherever. But, and here's where you're going to get annoyed with me, okay? For the United States to attempt to dictate through the UN or unilaterally that we don't like what you do and your leader needs to go away and needs to be replaced with someone in our model, okay, is bull feathers. It's unacceptable, it's inappropriate, and it flat out should not happen. And here's why. Particularly if you, and it's a precedent kind of thing. If you agree that, oh, well, we can give the UN power and authority to implement a regime change in Syria because Assad's a dirtbag and we don't like him, and he's repressing his own people who are trying to make a change, so, you know, we want the UN to get rid of him. And you say, it's okay for them to do that because we don't like that guy. You've established the precedent and you've given the power and authority to an organization that shouldn't get it in the first place. Then you're going to have the situation where, okay, well, they've already done it, right? Now the UN gets back together and goes, you know what? This Constitution Republic stuff is a pain in the butt. These guys have all the money and everybody else is starving and suffering, and we need to really redistribute that American wealth. And the only way we can really do it is if we change their government. So we're going to get rid of the government that they have there, because that Constitution is just a real major brick wall impediment to us doing what we want to do. And we're going to effect a regime change in America. You say, well, you know, you can't do that. You say, of course we can do that. We just did it in Syria. You said we could do it there. You said we could do it in Libya. You said we could do it in North Korea. You said we could do it here. You said we could do it there. Now we're doing it there. We're unifying our strength. That's the danger of, you know, taking your own personal proclivities and trying to impose them on others. Is Assad a bad guy? Yeah. Should we be the ones to kick him out? Hell no. That's up for the indigenous population of Syria to make that decision and affect the change. Now, we could help. We could help by, you know, trying to undermine the country. That's what we're doing in Iran right now. I mean, this whole sanction thing. Listen, if you think the sanctions aren't working, talk to someone who has relatives that still live in Iran. My barber still has family in Iran. But last time I got a haircut, about 3 weeks ago, they were saying that their cousin tried to wanted to exchange some money. Now, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the rial, which is the Iranian money, was trading at about 1,000 rial to a buck, something like that. And her financial advisor said, well, you know, wait, slow down. This is not a good time to do that. And because in the whole Forex thing, you're going to get hammered. But a week and a half later, the rial that had been trading for 1,000 rial to a dollar was up to 1,800 per dollar. And I don't know what it is now. Maybe some of you guys who are into the Forex trading stuff can check it out and give me a call. 808-5600 is the phone number. If you haven't already abandoned us to rush you off to the TV and watch all the pregame stuff, like my kid brother probably did. So 808-5600 is the phone number. But this sovereignty thing isn't something you can cherry-pick and say, well, we can cling to it when it supports me, but not necessarily everybody. We're talking universals here, guys. There are some core values that you have to recognize, and you most certainly don't want to undermine a core universal value by saying, well, it's okay if someone else is impacted by something that I don't like, because it can spin 180 real quick and affect you. It's 30 minutes past 12 o'clock. 808-5600 is the phone number. You can email me at Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at jeffmetcalf.com. Right here on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Jeff Metcalf on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Hoo-ah! 34 minutes past the hour. I'm Jeff Metcalf. 808-5600 is the phone number. You can email us at Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at jeffmetcalf.com. I just checked the email, and a whole bunch of people are starting to email, so I thank you. I really appreciate that. I will remind all of those who have emailed me that part of your job now is to tell 10 people to tell 10 people to tell 10 people to likewise tune in next Sunday when we're here and spread the word. So nice to see that. Nice to see so many people will still remember me. 808-5600 is the phone number. We talked a little bit about sovereignty and cyberspace and the Cold War. Obviously, we talked about the Newton Mitt thing. Iran, reportedly, has said they're going to attack any country whose territory is used by enemies, that means us, to launch a military strike against their soil. Now, yesterday on the air, I was visiting a couple of things about this whole Israeli-Iranian thing. And there's two or three things that kind of come together. First off, right now the U.S. and Israel are divided. Well, it's not so much I don't know how to phrase this. The Obama administration and the Netanyahu administration are at odds because they take different views on this. Obama, for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is political, would dearly love to have the Israelis just chill. Wait. Let's see what the sanctions can do. Let's talk about it, and let's not do anything precipitous that we can't take back. Meanwhile, Netanyahu says, "We'll do what we have to do when we have to do it. We're not going to ask permission from you." So there, neener neener neener, which kind of has Obama's panties in a wad. There were two stories that came out yesterday that struck me. Number one, the warning that Israeli facilities in North America and all over the world were put on high alert. Now, this came from an internal security document that ABC got their hands on. And it said, "We predict that the threat on our sites," this is coming from the Israeli sources, around the world will increase on both our guarded sites and soft sites. This was a letter being circulated by the head of security for the Consul General for the Mid-Atlantic States. Guarded sites refer to government facilities, you know, embassies, consulates, stuff like that. Soft sites mean Jewish synagogues, schools, community centers, like the one hit by terrorists in Buenos Aires back in 94, killed 85 people. So that's part one. Part two was kind of interesting. Let's see if I can find where I hid that story. It was that, I can't see it all. I ad-libbed the whole thing. But I can't remember, I was looking for who actually set it out. But there was a story about, back in November, there was an Iranian missile test that went bad. And it blew up. And the Iranians at the time said it was an accident. They were trying to do something really complicated, and it blew up. Apparently, you know, at the same time, they weren't acknowledging this covert war that allegedly is going on with the U.S. and Israel and whoever that's, you know, killing nuclear scientists and mucking things up and trying to slow down their whole nuclear program. So the explosion back in November, according to whoever this an Israeli official is, whose name I can't find at the second, said that the range on that missile, now we've known that Iran had medium-range missiles that could hit Israel. Everybody's known that. That's why the Israelis have their panties in a wad. Well, apparently this missile that blew up back in November had a range of like 6,000 miles, a long-range missile. So this Israeli guy is saying, it wasn't for us. They're testing that thing so they can hit the United States, opening the prospect that Iran could and arguably would hit the United States with some kind of missile. You add to that the fact that they no longer apparently care about collateral damage, and they've escalated the threat. As they escalated the threat, we had a story the day before suggesting that now they're saying, it used to be, okay, if Israel or the U.S. or any of their allies or friends does anything to attack our nuclear program, we will shut the Straits of Hormuz, we'll attack their targets, we'll respond aggressively. Well, as of last Thursday, now they're saying, you know what? Perception becomes reality. We think either the Israelis or the Americans are going to hit us. And that's enough for us to preemptively attack them. So basically, this dumb SOB sitting in Tehran is green-lighting the Israelis and the Americans by saying, you know what? We're not just going to, you know, hit you back if you hit us. We've decided that we're going to hit you before you hit us. So that kind of puts us in that real, real awkward position of do we, and it kind of raises the question and the ante for Obama as well. Do we wait until they hit us? And where are they going to hit us? They're going to hit us in the Mideast? Are they going to hit us in the Gulf? Are they going to hit us in Europe? Are they going to hit us in that? Or are they going to hit us in the continental United States? Is it going to be a conventional attack of some kind of missile? Or are there sleeper cells already planted here that are going to be green-lighted to release either nuclear, chemical, or biological warfare against the continental United States? And has Obama already decided, yeah, we're going to wait until they do that? Or is someone, hopefully, in that five-sided puzzle palace telling him, hey, guy, you can't wait. These jokers are serious as a heart attack. And if you don't do something to preemptively hit them, we are SOL. And I don't mean simply out of luck. John in Sonoma, you're on the air with Jeff Metcalf. Good afternoon.
Jeff, nothing earth-shattering, just a welcome back. It's good to hear your voice. I know I'm probably speaking for thousands of us who'd say we have missed you. Now we've got some place to go on Sundays.
Well, I thank you very kindly. At least until next Sunday, we'll find out.
Take care, and good luck to you, buddy.
John, thank you very kindly. I appreciate the call. Don't forget, your job is to tell 10 people to tell 10 people to tell 10 people to tune in and listen and let them know, okay? Because we really need that help. 41 minutes past the hour. 808-5600 is the phone number. So we got Iran's supreme poobah who is threatening on Friday to retaliate against the West for sanctions, a day after a U.S. newspaper said that Leon Panetta thinks that that Israel will likely bomb Iran within months, sooner rather than later. So Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's defiant televised speech marking the anniversary of the 79th Iranian Revolution was the first time a top authority had spoken publicly about the impact of the new sanctions. And candidly, they have strangled the economy in Iran. They're feeling it. They're feeling it hard. This long simmering confrontation between West and Iran over its nuclear program kind of entered this decisive phase. Things are being said, frankly, that can't be taken back. You know, to say it was a mistake for the Iranians to have said what they said, when they said it, the way they said it, is an understatement. They knew that Obama was already equivocating. Yeah, they know that Israel wants to hit them like breath, all right? But they also know that the bridle on Israel has been, in varying degrees, the United States and specifically the Obama administration, who doesn't want Israel to do anything. They want to see if, you know, what impact the sanctions are having and if we can avoid a military confrontation with Iran. Then this moron gets up in front of a microphone and says for God and everybody to hear that they're prepared to hit us. Preemptively. All right? They're not even going to wait. Obama apparently is comfortable in waiting until Iran or their surrogates launch some kind of horrific attack on the U.S. And remember, it could be more than just one location. It could be multiple locations. It could be conventional. It could be nuclear, chemical, biological. There used to be a thing, and when I redid my webpage recently, Mark Stamos, thank you very kindly for all the help and assistance. But when we spiffed up the webpage and changed the cosmetics and everything else, I found a whole bunch of broken links. And among the broken links was something that I used to refer to a lot. And it was about, it had to be 12 years ago. John Hopkins University did this thing called Operation Cold Winter. I think it was Cold Winter, something like that. Dark Winter. Operation Dark Winter. And it was we used to call them in the military a toot, a tactical exercise without troops. It was a wargaming thing to see what would happen if an enemy, whoever they may be, were to introduce smallpox as a biological warfare agent in the United States. And it was horrific. It took them like 10 days to even realize it was smallpox. They thought it was some kind of flu thing. And by the time they identified what it was, it had spread to about 35 states. Hundreds of thousands of people died, and it was horrific. So the prospect of some bad guy doing something chemically, biologically, or with a dirty nuke is very, very real. Once upon a time, we had elected officials who acknowledged it's not a question of if they're going to try another 9/11, it's when. And now the temperature has been raised, and the rhetoric has been raised, and frankly, the Iranians are saying stuff they can't take back. 45 minutes past the hour, 808-5600 is the phone number. You can email me at Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at Jeff Metcalf. Stay with us right here on Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
This is Hot Talk 560 KSFO with Jeff Metcalf.
That's me. 808-5600 is the phone number. Jeff Metcalf with you. You can email us, and I thank those of you that have already, at Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at jeffmetcalf.com. Here we are, Super Bowl Sunday, only a few minutes left to go. I will be back next week, by the way. So if you liked what you heard today or you didn't like and you want to throw more rocks, tune in next Sunday because we'll be back same time, 11 to 1 next Sunday. Here on Hot Talk 560 KSFO. I mentioned earlier that the United Nothing wants to impose a tax. This is something they come up with probably every 5 or 10 years, and there's always different reasons attached to it. I can remember when Kofi Annan was trying to do this. So now they're trying it again. They claim that they need a world tax imposed on all financial transactions to fund a global model of social services that will provide needy people with a basic income, free health care, education and housing. Where are they going to get that from? Well, they're not going to get it from the Congo. They're not going to get it from Somalia. They're going to get it from you and me. That's where they're going to get it from. I'll get back to this in a moment. First, I want to sneak in Kevin in Santa Rosa. Kevin, you're on the air with Jeff Metcalf. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jeff. I just wanted to say about you're talking about Iran saying they're going to preemptively strike. Aren't they taking a page out of the book from the United States, who did preemptively strike Iraq for the same reason that we didn't want to wait until the mushroom cloud was our warning sign?
Yep.
So how come it's okay for us but not for them?
I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not saying it's not okay. What I'm saying is it increases the threat level to the point that we need to be prepared for that. And whereas they used to – see, here's the thing, Kevin. Up until a couple of weeks ago, the sanctions were hurting Iran, and Obama was inclined to let the sanctions do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
There have been elements within the Obama administration, most certainly at the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, and most certainly in Israel, who are saying, hey, we're going to bomb these SOBs quick. We've got to do it. We've got to do it. We've got to do it. Obama and an element within the Obama administration saying, nope, chill. Wouldn't be prudent. We're going to back off. Let's see if we can't talk our way out of this before we actually have to get into something militarily that we is going to be uglier than we want. And so far, to date, apparently they've been able to prevail. They haven't launched anything militarily. Now, and this is why I'm saying from a strategic standpoint, it's a brain fart for the Iranians to have done what they did. Because what they have now acknowledged is they're saying, you know what? The perception of an attack is enough for us. We think you're going to hit us. So before you can hit us, we're going to hit you. And you're right. It's the same logic that we used against Saddam Hussein. So, kind of sort of. It's a little bit different. So what they're saying is, we're going to hit you wherever we can, however we can. And so there, neener, neener, neener. The dumb thing, from a strategic standpoint again, is, you know, I can remember when I used to teach tactics, long ago and far away. There are three basic elements that are necessary for a successful raid or ambush. Surprise, firepower, and violence of action. And the surprise element has just been flushed down the toilet by the Iranians by saying, hey, we're going to do that. I just think it was stupid on their part. If they were going to do it, from a tactical standpoint, they should have kept their mouth shut and done it. As it stands now, they've opened the door and they've basically green-lighted either or the U.S. and or Israel to hit them and to hit them hard before. Whereas prior to this stupid statement by the Iranians, we probably would have chilled our jets and waited. I just think it was a humongous strategic whoops on the part of the Iranians.
Couldn't you say that it was a humongous strategic whoops on the part of Israel or the United States if we did preemptively strike Iran because of what you said about cells being here in America? Those cells don't have to wait for Iran to be activated. If we bomb Iran, those cells will be activated. So, and I think as Ron Paul points out, these wars that we start are not winnable. All we're doing over the years is creating more and more enemies. We had 9 years of kids that were nine when we went into Iraq, who are now 18, who hate Americans, and, you know, and the process continues.
Kevin, we don't know what we don't know, and that's part of the problem. I thank you very kindly for the call. 808-5600. And, you know, actually, I don't know how many of you ever saw the movie Charlie Wilson's War with Tom Hanks. At the end of that movie, there was a very, very cool thing that Charlie Wilson, the congressman, who poured billions of dollars into Afghanistan to basically help the Mujahideen defeat the Russians. A lot of that armament eventually got turned on us when it was our turn in the mountains. But the interesting thing is, at the end of the movie, there was a plea on the part of Congressman Charlie Wilson to support Afghanistan with, which was basically chump change, okay? Not a lot of money, but in assisting with their infrastructure and developing schools and civic affairs kind of things, that would have been huge. The kind of stuff that, you know, special forces used to do a long time ago. That would have been, and the whole reason for that is exactly as Kevin just mentioned. You've got people who were young, who grew up with now deep-seated antipathies toward our country, And a lot of that could have been mitigated if, after the Russians left Afghanistan, the Americans had started to pour some resources into Afghanistan to assist them with, roads and sanitation and schools and hospitals and stuff like that. Instead, Congress was chintzy, and they wouldn't do that. And there's a great line at the end of the movie. I don't know what, I'm assuming it was accurate, about what happened. And some of you may recall it. Unfortunately, I'm not allowed, because of certain FCC restrictions, to articulate it on the air. But basically, it's, they did a great job until they messed up. And they could have and should have and arguably should have done something to help Iran after having won the military thing. And they were just blind and didn't. And as a result of that, like Kevin said, now you got a whole generation of people who back then hated the Russians. All right? Now you've got a whole generation of people who are negatively inclined toward America, and we have an opportunity to fix that, and yet we don't. Why? It doesn't make sense. Kevin also brings up an interesting point. And my suggestion that, the Iranians have opened the door to us preemptively preventing their preemptive strike, and that if we were to do that, it would let loose the alleged sleeper cells that already exist here. This is a classic catch-22. So what do you do? Do you not do something and wait for them to do something? Because if there were to be a preemptive attack against any Iranian target by either Israel or the U.S., the purpose of the attack would be to prevent the preemptive attack from them on us, right? Okay. If we don't do that and they preemptively attack us, then we have a retaliatory... You see, we're SOL. This is just an absolute unwinnable scenario. But I still hold by my original contention that the Iranians made a major rhetorical whoops by indicating that they are now prepared to not just conduct a preemptive attack against the U.S., but as evidenced by some stories earlier in the week, they're now comfortable with the prospect that if there's collateral damage, they're not concerned anymore. It used to be that they would hold off on doing certain things for fear that they would have to wade through a PR nightmare globally with pictures of, women and children's body parts being strewn across the street. They apparently don't care about that anymore. They're prepared to conduct a preemptive attack for the sake of a preemptive attack. And frankly, it's counterintuitive. Now, Kevin and others might suggest it's counterintuitive for us, but... CJ in Oakland, you're on the air with Jeff Metcalf. You're probably the last caller today.
I'm just curious, how many wars have the United States been in since the end of World War II as opposed to Iran? Well, combine that, Israel and the United States been in as opposed to Iran. How many countries have Iran invaded, occupied, or been involved in since the end of World War II compared to the U.S.?
You're asking me in 2 minutes to quantify... 60 years of history, and I can't do that. But I'll tell you what I'll do, CJ. I'll come up with a list for you, and next Sunday I'll tell you for sure.
Okay. I'll call you back.
You please do.
All
list
right.
of you want the number of countries that Iran has fought,
invaded, occupied.
Okay.
As opposed to the United States and Israel, and I'm saying United States with the help of Israel.
Okay. Now you're going to count the times that the Arab countries attacked Israel and. They were engaged in warfare, or does that not count?
You're talking about invading and occupying, and like we did Panama, we killed, 1,200 people. In Guantanamo, Grenada, we killed 3,000. In the Congo, we've helped to kill quite a few people over there for Colton.
Okay, so you want the count. I'll have it for you for sure for next week, CJ, promise.
Okay.
Thank you very kindly. That's going to about do it for today, unfortunately. But I would encourage you to please tell 10 people to tell 10 people to tell 10 people to tune in next Sunday. Same bat time, same bat station, 11 to 1, right here on Hot Talk 560 KSFO. And I'll be back. I don't know what's going to happen beyond that, but I will definitely for sure be here next Sunday. And we can explore and examine different things. And I'll do my... CJ gave me a homework assignment, and I'll come up with it. I think I know where she's going with that. But I'll see what I can come up with. Meanwhile... check out the triage of the news at www.jeffmetcalf.com. If you have not emailed me, please do. If there's something you want us to touch on next week that we didn't get to, I get the sum of it. I mean, the cyber warfare thing has really been a pet peeve of mine, as well as that sovereignty thing, which kind of dovetails, I think, with what CJ brought up. And the NATO being a dinosaur and anachronism. If you disagree, you know, please don't hesitate. I've got broad shoulders and a lot of scar tissue. I'm not shy about responding. And here's the thing. I know that some people complain that they only get to hear on certain talk shows just whatever that guy agrees with. I welcome the opportunity to have those who disagree with anything I have to say to give me a call. Love it, okay? And I promise you this. You'll have an opportunity to articulate your argument, even if or when I think you're totally whacked, okay? You'll have an opportunity to at least get it out for a couple of minutes. I'm Jeff Metcalf. Check. You can email me at Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, at jeffmetcalf.com. You're listening to Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
Here's the latest from ABC News.